Every year I make the eat healthier, workout, be healthier resolution, but every year it's hard to stick with it. If I had an automatic way to do those things, it might happen. It would be a breeze. Similarly, every year, thousands of people add saving money and investing money to their New Year's resolutions. And Acorns makes it easier to start saving and investing automatically. You don't need to be rich or have to go on some crazy budget that doesn't allow you any freedom. With Acorns, you can start with $5 or even just some spare change. Acorns shows you where your money's going and you see projected growth. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing in your future today. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Hidden Gems. We have a big Hidden Headlines episode for you, including Lori Vallow's latest attempt at saving herself and the full rundown of what happened at Corey Richens' evidentiary hearing. I was there. But first, a parent's worst nightmare. Last week in Italy, a newborn baby was kidnapped from the hospital. Yes, the hospital. Just after the mother had given birth and was missing for 3 hours before being found. So how could this happen? It seems straight out of a frightening movie. 24 hours after mom gave birth with dad in the hospital room, the mother and grandma had the baby, a little girl named Sophia, in the mother's hospital room when a woman walked in wearing a mask and introduced herself as a nurse. She told them that it had been more than 3 hours since the baby had been checked on by medical staff and told them she needed to take Sophia and would be right back. Well, of course, Sophia never returned to the room. And when mom asked to have Sophia, it didn't take long for hospital employees to realize something was terribly wrong and that Sophia wasn't actually in the care of any nurse. She had been kidnapped, and surveillance cameras caught it all. On the camera, the woman could be seen carrying little Sophia, but there was another person with her, an unidentified man, and they had a stroller that they put baby Sophia in on their way out. For 3 hours, law enforcement searched for little Sophia, and news about her disappearance quickly spread on Italy's social media. And luckily, Sophia was found after police set up roadblocks around the city's borders. And when they discovered her, she was no longer wearing the baby girl outfit she had been wearing at the hospital. Instead, she was wearing a baby boy outfit. As the police continued their investigation, they learned that this was a very calculated kidnapping. Those baby boy clothes were no mistake. For the last 9 months, the suspects, Rosa Vespa and her partner Moses, have been telling everybody that they were having a baby. And when police went to the house, well, apparently, it was all set up. It was decorated head to toe, ready to go for a baby boy. Thankfully, baby Sophia was reunited with her mom and dad shortly after she was found and is now safely at home with her family. Moses has also since been released because, as it turns out, Rosa had him completely convinced she was pregnant. And so apparently, even wearing a fake pregnancy belly, keeping him locked in on the idea that he was about to be a dad. So it's still unclear why he was in on the kidnapping with that detail, but we'll continue to be following this story out of Italy. As we always say, the Daybell case is the case that just keeps on giving, keeps on going, and it seems to never end, and there are always new updates. Well, that includes this week. As of right on cue, last week, Lori filed another motion. This time, she filed a motion to completely dismiss her charges for the attempted murder of her ex-nephew-in-law, Brandon Boudreau. Her reasoning? Well, she says Arizona violated her speedy trial rights And when I read through the motions, my initial thought or concern, I guess you could say, was that maybe, possibly, she might have a point. Let me read a few lines from the motion and you can decide. You can also see the full motion on our Instagram page, instagram.com/hiddentruecrime, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/hiddentruecrime, or on our YouTube community post. The motion reads, the defendant, Lori Vallow, requests this court to dismiss the case with prejudice. Facts. One, the defendant was extradited from Idaho on November 30th, 2025 to Arizona. Pause. Clearly, she got that year wrong. Not that I haven't done that before, but it was not in 2025. I believe it was 2023. Yeah, definitely 2023. So the defendant was extradited from Idaho on November 30th, 2025. She doesn't mean that date, to Arizona. Two, the defendant was arraigned for two separate charges on December 7th, 2023. Got the year right that time. And the initial date was set at that time for a speedy trial on April 1st, 2024. A speedy trial must commence, she states, within 150 days. Okay, so four, the judge deemed these charges complex, which gives the state 270 days to give the defendant a speedy trial. Five, the new trial date was set for August 1st, 2024, with the last possible day to begin on September 2nd, 2024, to be in compliance with a speedy trial within 270 days. Six, the former defense team filed a motion for continuance, which the defendant objected to on the record, but it was granted, and a new trial date was set for February 24th, 2025. Seven, Rule 11 was also filed by former defense team, further delaying the trial, and a new trial date of March 31st, 2025, and it was set for that date. Well, number eight, it has now been 314 days, she writes, since the defendant was arraigned. Nine, on January 10th, 2025, Judge Boreski declined to set a trial date on this Brandon Boudreau case. And 10, the trial date that is set on March 31st, 2025, is for another case. That's true. It's for the murder of Charles Vallow. And then she writes, only, in all caps, underlined, only that case. It is the position of the defense that these trial dates have never been set for the Brandon Boudreau case. And the alleged case occurred over 5 years ago. So I do want to say, well, I think Lori Vallow is right. I also think that the Brandon Boudreau case was supposed to directly follow the Charles Vallow case. I'm not quite sure, though. Again, I'm looking forward to this playing out. The last thing that Lori Vallow states before signing her name, this is all written because she doesn't have a computer to type in prison. She writes that the defendant's constitutional rights have been violated and the government must follow its own rules. An evidentiary hearing is requested. So there you go. We will see how that all plays out. In Tennessee, a man was arrested for allegedly murdering his pregnant girlfriend. And if that is not horrendous enough, he's spoken to the media. And what he says is shocking, to say the least. We'll get to that in just a minute. But here's what we know so far. According to charging docs, on Monday, January 20th, police were called to the house in Springville Hill, Tennessee for a welfare check around 6 a.m. The call was placed by 29-year-old Vidal Wegner. When officers arrived, they found Vidal's 30-year-old girlfriend, Ariel Neville's, dead. Ariel, who works as a union millwright and served in the Illinois Army Reserves, was pregnant at the time of her death. And based on interviews, it seems pretty clear her pregnancy was motive for murder. Vidal admits to police that he was the one who killed Ariel, using both of his hands and his forearm to strangle her. That is always so personal, that attack, to strangle someone. And shortly after, though, he decides to do another interview, this time with the local news channel, where he talked about what happened. I mentioned that this was shocking, Take a listen.
Okay, I got to hit you with the big question. You know it's coming. Did you kill her?
What did I do? No, dude, I didn't. She did it to herself. I told her this is the way. I had a beautiful future set up for us. She wanted that crazy. She chose this. It didn't have to be this way.
So were you mad because she got pregnant?
Listen, when I started that relationship, I told her, if we get pregnant, are we going to do something about it?
Right.
She said, yeah. She found out 10 weeks in. She said, I want to keep it. I'm like, didn't we have that conversation? I'm not doing this. She said, yeah.
Are you missing her at all and missing perhaps even getting a chance to meet that little
Listen,
baby?
Listen, I loved her. I would have took care of her, the baby. I would have took care of her siblings that she wanted to take with us. I would have done all of that. She was stable. She was calm. I like that. You know what I mean? She took care of me. It was peace. And then she gets pregnant and everything changes, you know?
What do you want people to know about you?
I didn't do nothing wrong. I did everything I could in a relationship to make everything possible. I cried out for help every single day about this and nobody could help me.
Any remorse?
I got plenty of remorse, man. It didn't have to happen this way.
Yes.
She wants to be crazy. I told her, you know, if you didn't like the plan, we could have changed it. We could have figured it out.
I got the affidavit, and I'll just tell you what it says. In short, it says that basically you killed her because she was pregnant and you strangled her. Is that true?
That's not how it went.
Well, set me straight.
I'm protecting my legacy. I'm abiding by the Constitution. I'm not doing anything wrong. There's no way for me to get her to be held accountable for what she's doing. We had an agreement. Why did she go back on that?
Vidal is being held without bond on one count of felony murder, as well as two counts of first-degree murder, one for Ariel and one for the unborn baby. He has a court date next week, and Hidden True Crime will continue following this tragic case. Last Thursday, I was in Utah for the evidentiary hearing for Corey Richens. The goal of this hearing was to determine what evidence would be admissible in the trial versus what would be thrown out and not be allowed in as evidence. And of course, this was a really important hearing because what evidence is part of the trial could make or break any case. And so, let's go over what happened. The day started pretty much right on time. The courtroom is always pretty full when Corey has a hearing. I've been to others. And on one side of the courtroom is Eric's family and the general public. And on the other side is Corey's friends and family. And by the time the media and the public were allowed in, Judge Mrazek was already at his bench and both the prosecution and the defense, including Corey, were already seated. So three motions were filed by the defense. The first was a motion to suppress statements. The second was a motion to suppress electronic data. And the third was to suppress the infamous walk the dog letter. So let's go over each of these motions. For this first motion to suppress statements, the state called Detective Eric Maynard to the stand. And during his testimony, the camera was turned off so only those of us in the courtroom were able to hear, but I was there for it all. And this is what was discussed. On April 13th, 2022, Detective Maynard says, just 1 month after Eric's death, there was a search warrant for Corey's home as well as, quote, her person, end quote. And what that means is the search warrant includes anything on Corey. So even before the search warrant, there was surveillance happening. So when Corey left her house, Detective Maynard pulled her over. And after pulling her over, he walked up to Corey's car and asked Corey to step out because she was being detained. So when Detective Maynard walked up to the car, Corey had her cell phone in her lap, according to Detective Maynard. But when he asked her to get out of the car, Corey left her cell phone in the car and followed Detective Maynard back to his car. Well, Detective Maynard says that within the first 60 seconds of her introduction, he realized that his body cam was not working. Not a good time for that. But he quickly turned on his phone camera instead. Both Maynard and Corey were in the front seat of his patrol car, and all of us in court were able to see this video. Although there wasn't much to see because the way the phone was angled, really, all we could see was a car console, but we could hear things pretty clearly. And Corey, well, she sounded pretty emotional and panicked, which was interesting because Maynard testified before we watched the video that he did not observe any tears from Corey. But according to the sound we were all hearing in the courtroom, she sounded like she was in distress. And in the recording, some of the most noticeable things she said that I caught were, quote, "Is my sister-in-law trying to take my house?" Or, quote, "Is this because my sister-in-law wants all her stuff from my house?" And, quote, "This is so embarrassing," end quote. She also asked about calling her mom and said things about not knowing what was going on multiple times. She also asked if she was arrested, to which Detective Maynard told her she was not under arrest. She just needed to stay with him and that she was detained. At some point, another detective met Corey and Detective Maynard at the scene of the traffic stop. Her name is Detective Woody. And when she got there, she asked Corey if she would go with her to get her phone. Corey Lee willingly walked with Detective Woody, reached in her car, and gave Detective Woody her cell phone. Detective Woody then handed the phone over to Detective Maynard, asking him to hold it for her. Maynard testified on the stand that after Corey handed over her phone, there were some numbers that Corey wanted off of her phone. And so when they left the traffic stop, Maynard and Corey met up at Corey's house, where Detective Maynard says she, Corey, willingly gave him her phone passcode. Well, during Maynard's testimony, it seems like there were two main things that the defense was trying to hit home. Number one, Corey was never read her Miranda rights. The defense believes that she should have been informed of her rights and that any statements she made during that time should not be used against her. And two, they argued that the seizure of her phone was illegal. Even though Corey was the one who reached in her car and got her phone to hand it over, the defense argued that at the time this happened, one, Corey was not aware of her rights as she had not been Mirandized, and two, the collection of the phone was illegal because they did not have a search warrant for the car at the time, just for Corey in her house, and Corey left that phone in her car. And three, they knew it was not legal because they later went and applied for a search warrant for Corey's car. After Detective Maynard took the stand, Detective Woody was brought in to testify about that very same day and that traffic stop. She was actually the one who initially applied for the search warrant at the house, and she said that she was actually at the sheriff's office that morning of the search warrant. And once she heard the traffic stop was in progress, she went over to assist Detective Maynard. But while Corey sounded, again, like she was crying, Detective Woody also states that she never actually saw Corey crying. She did corroborate Detective Maynard's story that Corey was the one who grabbed the cell phone out of the car and handed it over to Detective Woody. Although I never did see video of that phone being handed to Detective Woody from Corey, but this is what they both claim in their testimony. It was during the traffic stop when Corey mentioned getting numbers out of her phone. So Woody told her that Maynard would follow Corey back to the house and that he could get them. In the meantime, Detective Woody went over to Becky's house. So who was Becky? Because this is a name thrown out here. Well, Becky has been an employee of Eric Richens and had been an employee of Eric Richens before his death. And Becky had electronic devices that Woody wanted. After going to Becky's house, Detective Woody went to Corey's house and Corey was there. She asked Corey for the safe code and or to open the safe up that was at Becky's house, which Corey did. While they were walking to and from the safe, Corey was asking questions about the search warrant, what they had found and what they were looking for. And what they were searching for, by the way, this day was fentanyl. All right, gems, many people have been asking me for my secret formula or the perfect way to make dream. And although there's not any perfect way, I think I found the almost perfect way, if I'm going to be honest. It starts with hot water, as you can see there, and then you add a scoop of dream. Okay, a scoop and just a little bit more, especially when I need that extra help falling asleep. It does the job every time. I sleep so well and wake up feeling refreshed and ready to go in the mornings. And then I use the frother that Dream gave me on my first order. Everyone gets this on their first order. I use it more than just on Dream. It is now a staple in the kitchen. I love this. And then what I'm going to do is top my drink with some steamed oat milk. This is the secret, in my opinion. Just a perfect amount of creaminess, but nothing too extreme right before bed. Use a QR code or the link in the description of this episode for more information on Dream. We love this drink. It is done so much for our family. Thank you, Dream. It is officially 2025, and as you are setting goals for the new year, consider adding a new language. Whether you use it for travel or your career, it is made simple by using Rosetta Stone. With 25 different language choices, Rosetta Stone has been the most trusted language learning program for 30 years. And not only is it easy to access on your phone or your computer, but actually learning the language is easier than ever before. Rosetta Stone is designed to teach you not only to speak the language, but also think in the language as well. Whether you want to learn French, Italian, German, Chinese, or something else, Rosetta Stone gives you plenty of options. Start the new year off with a resolution you can reach. Today, Hidden True Crime listeners can take advantage of this Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Hormonal changes are so hard, to say the least. Hot flashes, anyone else? Add in the thousands of hormone disruptors that are in our environment, and it is even worse. From our water, food, the air we breathe, and the clothes we wear, they are everywhere. But the good news is that when Hormone Harmony enters the picture, it can help reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is a supplement that contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. The best thing about adaptogens, they help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony is actually part of my personal 2024 playbook. Hormone Harmony makes no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. That's happy, H-A-P-P-Y, mammoth, M-A-M-M-O-T-H.com. Just use the code HIDDENTRUECRIME at checkout. That's code HIDDENTRUECRIME. Use that with happymammoth.com for 15% off today. As a busy working mom, it is hard to find time to shop or find that right outfit for that certain event. That's where Armoire comes in. I choose Clothes to Rent. They come right to my doorstep from my phone, and I get to try all of these new clothes regularly, figuring out what I like and don't like, all without those awful dressing room mirrors. And when I am ready to swap my clothes out for different styles, Armoire can do my laundry. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you build the perfect wardrobe with high-quality brands recommended just for you. All you need to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready, swap them out for more new to you styles. Right now, our Hidden Gems can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/hiddentruecrime. That's Armoire, Armoire.style/hiddentruecrime to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. On cross-exam of Detective Woody, Attorney Nestor, who is Corey's attorney, the defense once again tried to hone in on the fact that there was no search warrant for Corey's car that day, that there were only, again, search warrants for the house and Corey's person.
And you ask her, do you have a phone with you? Is that right?
Correct.
And this is when she's still sitting in the car being Correct. Detained, right? And then she answers, I have my phone. Yeah. And what do you ask her?
I ask her, is it in your pocket?
And what does she say?
She says, we have phones, we have no, it's in my car.
It's in my car. Okay. So there's really no dispute that at the point she's sitting in that car, it was not on her person, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then if you go forward to, page 11 at the very top, you say to her, do you want to come with me and grab your phone real quick? Is that right?
Correct.
All right. Prior to that, did you ever give her Miranda rights?
I did not.
Did you ever tell her that she had an option whether she cooperated with you or not?
I don't believe I did say anything like that.
What were you wearing that day?
I was wearing a blue shirt, like a polo, and a black jacket, and I usually had either gray or khaki pants.
Right. And on that blue shirt, there's an insignia for the Summit County Sheriff's Department. Is that right?
Correct, but it's covered by the jacket.
And the jacket identifies you as law enforcement?
It does not.
is not. Did you tell her? She knows you're law enforcement, right?
She should, yes.
Because you guys had talked before.
We have, yes.
You had asked her to be interviewed, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And you knew she had a lawyer.
Correct.
Because you had talked to her lawyer about arranging an interview with her.
Correct.
And you knew she had a lawyer at the time you were talking to her that day out on the street, right?
Correct.
And did you advise her she had a right to call that lawyer and get advice?
I did not.
And while they didn't say this exactly, as I understood it, if her phone was in her lap at the time of the stop and Maynard took it from Corey right as she exited the car, if she had had it on her, that would be a different story because it would be considered as on her person. But because Corey had left her phone in the car, the defense argues that they needed a search warrant prior to getting it from the car. But instead, Detective Woody went back later in the middle of serving the search warrant on the house to get the search warrant for the car. Interesting. The next person on the stand was Investigator Gibson, who is the lead crime scene investigator for the Summit County Sheriff's Office. Gibson was at the scene of the search warrant, but she also manages the evidence room for the Summit County Sheriff's Office. For the most part, she was really just on the stand to confirm the chain of custody for the phone, who had it, where it was at each point in the process. So once the phone was taken to the evidence room and put in a locker there, she then took it in as evidence and did the processing of the phone. Then it went to another detective, and then it went to the Regional Computer Forensics Lab, also called the RCFL. They have the phone from May of 2022 to July of 2022 to do a phone dump and get any and all evidence from the phone, which, as we know, it is a lot of info, a lot. And in July of 2022, the RCFL sent the phone back to the Summit County Sheriff's Office, along with a hard drive that had all of the data on it. However, Gibson testified that the Summit County Sheriff's Office did not have the capability to look at the hard drive with their software for a few months, even after the phone was sent back to them. After Gibson's testimony, we had an hour lunch break, and I was able to talk to both the 2020 and Dateline producers who are covering this case in detail. They were great. They helped me clarify some of the testimony I'd heard in court, and then we went back in for the afternoon session. The next person on the stand was Detective O'Driscoll. O'Driscoll got involved in the case in early 2023. That's when he was assigned to the case and became the lead investigator on the case. So on April 14th, 2023, so basically 1 year after the initial search warrant of the house, he went over to the Richens house to introduce himself to Corey. When he arrived at Corey's, he had an audio recorder on him. However, at some point, Corey invited him in and his partner that day into her house. So that is when he activated his body cam. He wasn't wearing his work clothes, so there wasn't anywhere to mount this body cam on him. So instead, he just set it up. But he testified that the body cam does beep, it vibrates, it has red flashing light, and was in plain view. So Corey would have definitely known that she was being recorded. After being invited into her house, they all went into the living room. And for the next 3 hours, Corey's mother, Detective O'Driscoll, and his partner, they all talked. O'Driscoll said Corey was cheerful and outgoing and seemed to be happy to be talking to them. O'Driscoll had one main goal, he says, which was to figure out how Eric Richens had died. And at that time, all he knew was that Eric had fentanyl in his system, and he thought it was either an accidental overdose, murder, or maybe Eric had purposely ingested it as a way to hurt himself. Admittedly, I was a bit surprised by this timeline, as it was now 13 months after Eric Richens had died, and O'Driscoll was claiming he still wasn't sure if he was investigating a murder, just trying to find out how the fentanyl got into Eric's Moscow mule. But nonetheless, once again, Attorney Nestor, Corey's attorney, seemed to be honing in on the fact that Corey was not Mirandized by O'Driscoll. The other thing brought up during his testimony was an orange notebook that was seized during a search warrant of the house in May of 2023 on the day of Corey's arrest. Law enforcement found this notebook and read it during the search. It's never been clear what was exactly written in this orange notebook, but the defense was arguing that the search warrant for the house that day did not include a notebook. Law enforcement went back later to amend the warrant to include the notebook. Therefore, they want that notebook and the evidence in it to be thrown out for the trial. And however, the prosecution argued that the notebook was going to be found either way, and it was inevitable evidence. That was in quotes, inevitable evidence. After quite a bit of back and forth on the issue, Judge Mrazek closed the proceedings to the public for around 40 minutes while the attorneys and the judge all talked about the issue surrounding the orange notebook. I was sitting in the jury box with the rest of the media, and we were ushered out during this time. And oh, I wish I could have heard what was being said. Alas, when we were allowed back into the courtroom, Eric's brother-in-law, Clint Benson, was on the stand ready to testify. Clint is married to Katie Richens Benson, who is in charge of Eric's estate. It's Eric's sister. He really was just there, Clint, to confirm that no one had been going in or out of the house since the estate took control over the house. Law enforcement have gone when necessary. The family has hired one person that goes in for those evidence purposes to assist police. People who had temporary custody of Eric and Corey's children for just a little while before they were able to then be with family, they went in once to the house to get items for the children. And then a locksmith came on the day of their arrest to change the locks. But every time, according to Clint, someone has been on or at the property, and Clint has been present. After Clint testified, we got to what most would probably say, arguably, at least I would say, was the most important part of this hearing, and that is the walk the dog letter, the infamous walk the dog letter. And for a quick backstory, this letter was found in Corey's cell with the large words, walk the dog, at the top, hence the name. It was scrawled atop the letter. And prosecutors have argued it was essentially a coded letter where Corey is telling family members how to testify, telling them to say the fentanyl was from Mexico and it was Eric's fentanyl. So in other words, witness tampering. It's a pretty big deal. However, after it was found, Corey claimed that it was part of a fictional book she was writing, nothing more than that. And while the initial report written by officers said that they found it in an LSAT book in her cell, Corey and her defense claimed that it was found in a manila envelope with her former attorney, Sky Lazaro's name on it, as well as the words client attorney privilege. So can and should this walk the dog letter be allowed in trial if this was client attorney privilege? Two jail staff members were brought onto the stand to testify about finding this letter. Both of them were involved in the cell searches where this letter was found in Corey's cell, they claimed. The first one to testify was Sergeant Barrett. He testified that on September 13th, there was a search of Corey's cell after she had been taken to the medical facility by EMS. The search was essentially just a routine search to make sure no medical supplies had been left behind. However, jail staff then allegedly learned that Corey had held up a letter on a video call with her mother for her mother to read, is what they suspected. And so they did a second search of the cell. They never found the letter, but the next day they did a third search of the cell while moving Corey's belongings downstairs from her upstairs cell as they were going to switch her cells. Well, during that search, that is when the walk the dog letter was allegedly found. Sergeant Barrett claims he did not see the letter during that search and said it was found in an LSAT book by Sergeant Thomas. Well, when Sergeant Thomas was brought in to testify, he claims that while Barrett was looking in the infamous Sky Lazaro envelope to make sure there was no contraband or anything Corey couldn't have inside of it, he was searching through papers and books that were on her top bunk. According to him, the walk the dog letter was in that LSAT book. In court, we were able to see videos from that search. The camera was from across the pod, but you couldn't see the search happening in her pod. The camera, which jail officials say is a motion-based camera, seemed to be pausing frequently, I will say. I witnessed that while the search was ongoing. And both sergeants said that they really had never seen that happen before. But one thing we could see were things were being carried downstairs in a box. The defense argued that the LSAT book was put in a box that was downstairs at the time that Sergeant Thomas claims to have found the letter in the LSAT book in her cell. So in other words, while these two witnesses say they found the letter in an LSAT book in her cell, the defense is claiming couldn't be possible because that LSAT book at that time was downstairs and not even in her cell. It's definitely confusing. This is what I think the defense was implying, that the camera footage was altered and that the letter couldn't have been found in an LSAT book. In other words, how do you say the cameras were altered without saying the cameras were altered? I think they were saying it. And they're saying it couldn't have been found in that LSAT book because that was downstairs. So it must have been found in this manila envelope labeled Sky Lazaro, client attorney privilege. Admittedly, from my view, it did sort of look like Sergeant Thomas was looking inside an envelope during the search. But the camera was from a distance, and I can't be certain. Both men, though, claimed that the envelope didn't say attorney-client privilege, which is kind of a big deal to me. Like, I didn't realize that that's what they were claiming until this hearing. They said it only said Sky Lazaro's name on the manila envelope, although the evidence pics I have seen say both. So I'm officially confused. There really was no resolution to this letter because Sergeant Barrett and Thomas both stuck to the fact that it was found in the LSAT book in Corey's cell. They said it over and over again. They stuck to that story. And after they testified, O'Driscoll was called back to the stand where he confirmed who the numerous people were in that letter so that when Judge Mrazek reads it, we understand the references and foundation. After O'Driscoll testified, both sides then said there was nothing left to argue and a hearing was set for February 3rd. In the meantime, the attorneys are going to be working on their briefings for the judge as he is working on making rulings on the motions that were filed. After court, I appeared on both ABC's Nightline and Court TV to talk about this walk the dog letter.
Well, here's the transcript of Corey's jail call with her brother about this letter, which she says isn't a letter. Corey Richens, that's what it comes down to. Well, and they just keep saying it's a letter. It was never a letter. Like, it was part of a freaking book. Like, it was never a letter. It was never in an envelope. Or, and then her brother says, it was part of the book you're writing? Yeah, so I was writing this book that, so basically it's like everything that happened up until like the detention hearing, you know? And then at the detention hearing, I actually get out of jail. So it's like a fiction mystery kind of book, you know? Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. It's a 65-page novel. I'm not believing that, Lauren. Am I too skeptical?
Look, I don't believe the novel bit at all. Not one bit. I think it's pretty clear when you hear it and when you read it what it is. I think the question for me, though, I will say I have this question. I have a question after being at the evidentiary hearing where it was found. Because the sergeant and the corrections officer on stand said they found it in an LSAT book. But it you can't completely see it. It's footage that nobody's seen. You had to be there to see it. And I saw it. And it almost looks as if it wasn't found in the book. The book is outside the cell and it looks to have been found. There it is. There's some footage. Okay, thank you. And it looks to have been found inside a envelope. And then there's debate about whether or not it said attorney-client privilege or if it just said Sky Lazaro's name. I think I want to know. I want to know where this is found. And there is, it, you know, that I think is what's going to be telling whether or not it can be used in trial. If it is used in trial and they claim that it's a fictional book, no one's going to buy it.
That would be absolutely silly to do.
Hidden True Crime is going to continue to cover this case like we always have. For those of you that are now just catching up with everything Corey Richens, take a listen to our episode with the complete backstory, Corey Richens Unmasked, to be up to date with everything and to follow this trial with us. I will be at the trial. I plan to go. And I will be giving all of the updates in real time. This week on Hidden True Crime, John and I have covered stereotypes in crime and criminals this week on Patreon. We are recording weekly behind-the-scenes podcast episodes exclusive for Patreon this year in 2025, dropping each Wednesday. And you can find them all at patreon.com/hiddentruecrime. And I have been rapidly editing our Delphi series. We are looking forward to releasing that very soon. And I'll even tell you when. Drum roll. Are you ready? Monday. Yes, this Monday. And you can listen to this series anywhere you listen to podcasts. On YouTube, we are planning for a Saturday Hidden Hour with myself and Dr. John. So stay tuned. We plan to go deeper into the Utah House of Horrors and what happened to Summer Roney. So please get caught up on this case before Saturday. It's one we are also following closely. As always, thank you for subscribing. This is Lauren signing off on Hidden True Crime.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.